This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, May 15th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The 5th annual KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival begins its season this Friday night at 7 in the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The University of Arkansas Music Department faculty and guest artists will perform string quartets by Jenna Stera, Barber, and Dvorak. Friday's concert is free but requires online registration due to limited seating. Registration and more information available at KUAF.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, self-checkouts are changing the way we shop, but they are also creating new opportunities for thieves, and we learn more. Plus, a conversation with Jerusalem Greer, one of the authors participating in this year's Books in Bloom Literary Festival in Eureka Springs. Also, Stephen Bias, conductor for the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra, stops by the studio to discuss a music program for students.
First, a 2.8 magnitude earthquake was felt yesterday morning in northeast Arkansas. It occurred just after midnight, 4 miles southwest of Truman. Arkansas Geohazard Supervisor Scott Osbrooks notes that small seismic events are a regular occurrence near the New Madrid Fault.
No explanation for it other than we're just going to say this is just a part of the natural cycle. I mean, earthquakes, they go through periods of quiescence, just calm, and then you get these bursts of activity. They're episodic is the word we use.
Several natural gas pipelines passed through the region, but Osbrook says yesterday's quake was likely not strong enough to cause any damage. Although small and routine, it occurred in the New Madrid seismic zone, which has produced major earthquakes in the past with magnitudes greater than 7.
A bomb threat made via Twitter to the Clinton Presidential Center in Little Rock yesterday didn't disrupt activities. Captain Edwin Wolf of the Little Rock Fire Department says a search of the building didn't turn up any explosives. He says bomb threats for the presidential library are rare.
Not for the Clinton Library, no. We get this occasionally for schools, you know, high schools, things like that, but not for the Clinton Library. It's not very common for that.
Sergeant Cassandra Davis of the Little Rock Police Department says the building did not have to be evacuated. She says it's currently unclear whether police will investigate the threat.
Commencement ceremonies for many high schools are scheduled for this weekend, as is graduation for Northwest Arkansas Community College. The commencement will be at 2 Sunday afternoon at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. Stephen Hines, the college's director of public relations, says 455 students are expected to walk this year, receiving some 1,500 degrees.
The only thing that we have asked is just because we have such a really large crowd and there are so many graduates walking, we just think that, you know, people need to think about arriving early, and that if the main room does fill, if all the chairs fill, we do have an overflow room set up with video where people would still be able to see what's happening.
Last year, NWAC graduated about 360 students.
The votes are in, and Sebastian County's 1 cent sales tax will remain in effect for another 10 years. Voters passed the tax with 78.9% or 4,704 votes for, and 21.1% or 1,260 votes against. With only 6,002 votes cast, voter turnout was at a low 8.6%. The sales tax generates about $22 million annually, with the largest chunk of that money, about $15 million, going to the city of Fort Smith, 76% of which goes toward funding police and fire services.
The Carroll County Sheriff's Department announced yesterday it had successfully completed a successful rescue of a lost elderly resident. According to a release from the department, Carroll County Special Operations Rescue Team late last week searched for a missing 6-year-old resident of the Brighton Ridge Nursing Home in Eureka Springs for more than a half hour before a canine unit was dispatched to the facility. After the resident's clothing was sampled, the canine unit began the search from the facility north along Highway 23 toward a wooded area. Because of the dog's tracking training, his handler, Corporal D.J. Harlan, decided to cease the canine-assisted search, but the resident was quickly found within 25 yards of where that search ended.
The College of Education and Health Professions at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville has created a new position, the Assistant Dean for Health Professions. According to an announcement released yesterday by the university, Fran Hagstrom, Associate Professor of Communication Disorders, has been selected to fill the position. With the appointment, Hagstrom joins other assistant deans, one associate dean, and Tom Smith, Dean of the College. In the release, Smith says the new dean position will be important in the continuing continuing growth and high quality of the programs that focus on the health professions.
Many flags across the region are at half-staff today in honor of Peace Officers Memorial Day. Since a joint resolution was passed in October 1962, May 15th of each year has been designated as Peace Officers Memorial Day and the week in which it falls as Police Week.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals fell to the Arkansas Travelers last night, 4-1. The loss marks the third in a row for the Nats, and the team is winless in the four-game series against the Travs. The Naturals are 13-23 on the year, and play continues tonight at Dickie Stevens Park in Little Rock.
Mostly cloudy tonight, 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms through the night, lows around 60. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, 30% chance of rain in Northwest Arkansas. It's a 50% chance of rain in the Arkansas River Valley. Highs tomorrow, mid-70s. And for Thursday night, 20% chance of showers before 1 a.m., lows in the mid-60s. This is Ozarks at Large. New in-store retail technologies such as self-scan, which interfaces with self-checkout, are transforming how we shop. But they also present new opportunities for thieves. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
The sounds of a traditional checkout experience. Clerks ring up your purchase, bag your items, take your money. But now, more shoppers are checking out at automated self-serve kiosks.
Please select from popular items or look up item alphabetically.
And certain mass merchant retailers are experimenting with do-it-yourself scanners via mobile handheld store devices or personal smart devices. Walmart's testing Scan and Go.
It really is simple. You just use your phone to scan the product barcode and then bag your item.
Scan and Go web promotion makes it sound easy, but it's a little tricky. First, you need newer generation devices to allow the auto locate to launch the in-store mode. Tap the green shopping cart icon, then the scan key. That activates the camera function used to scan package barcodes, and certain bagged items require smushing to get a clear read. It takes a little effort to focus the barcode properly for it to scan, and small products are easy, but larger, heavy ones, like square juice bottles.
You need almost two hands to do this. You have to set the product down and hold the phone and center it over the top until it's in focus.
Scan products appear as a pictorial list with a running cost tally. You bag items into your cart as you go. When finished, you roll up to the self-checkout lane, tap the transfer scan and go icon on the register screen, scan the QR code with your phone or device, which transfers the mobile contents to the computer register. Tap finish, swipe your credit card, and you're done. The receipt appears on your device, saving paper. Last year, a Walmart executive was reported saying that repurposing associates away from cashiers will save the company $12 million in wages every second. The question is, how much money will retailers lose due to malicious theft associated with these new technologies? Vishwanath Venkatesh, a distinguished professor at the University of Arkansas Walton College of Business, is researching mobile self-checkout risks.
We've understood about the process, whereas before, the scanning of the items, the payment, and this departure from the store was all taking place at the same time. Now it's separated in time and space. Scanning can take place somewhere else at some other time. Payment can take place, and then you're leaving the store. And so there needs to be a process for what we've called validation.
Proving that patrons are walking out with stolen inventory, what industry refers to as shrink, and stealing has spiked in recent years. According to the Global Retail Theft Barometer, shrink saw an annual increase in 2011 of 6.6% among North American retailers, costing companies more than $45 billion. Dr. Venkatesh's research data is being gathered from in-store shopper surveys and focus groups comprised of shoplifters, which fall into three broad categories: cash-strapped first-time offenders who steal on a whim, professional shoplifters who steal for resale, and kleptomaniacs.
Customers feel that video and the store employees, the combination of the video and the store employees, would be the two most effective deterrents. Shoplifters actually feel that video and registration with the store in order to use the mobile devices, because that means they're identified. So they feel that those two are the most effective deterrents. Because I think part of it is that they've found their ways around store employees. They know where to look for them and they know how to deal with them. Whereas the customers, the average customers may feel that, well, store employees are going to be effective in being deterred. So video and store registration seem like they would be the most effective.
A repurposed cashier placed on store floors to stock inventory could also serve as a theft deterrent, watching out for patrons who might be fake mobile scanning items to secret pest self-checkout. Some retailers have reportedly removed self-checkout lanes from stores due to increased theft. But Walmart's installing 10,000 new lanes this year, tooling up three-quarters of the company's 4,000 U.S. stores for self-service shopping.
Unexpected item in bag and area. Remove this item before continuing.
NCR Corporation, based in Georgia, is installing the self-checkout lanes, and StopLift Checkout Vision Systems, based in Massachusetts, is providing security solutions to NCR. StopLift CEO and founder Malloy Kundu.
Self-checkout lanes, and it varies by store and store format, but we've seen literally as much as five times higher scan avoidance or theft at self-checkout lanes as compared to manned checkout lanes.
Via weightless theft.
So leaving items in the cart, scanning it or pretending to scan it, but then putting it in a bag which they bag onto the floor, or they hold it so that it doesn't actually put its weight down onto the weight sensor.
Thieves also type in cheap codes for expensive items or simply walk away from the kiosk to the nearest exit when no one's looking. But StopLift Checkout Vision Systems provides real-time video surveillance above the checkout lane, showing a clear view of fraudulent behavior.
So essentially, it can see that, you know, I had this steak that I pretended to scan, didn't actually scan, and then, you know, I stuck it directly back into the cart.
When a questionable move is detected, the conveyor locks up and issues an alert. A trained clerk is dispatched to politely investigate. Security is brought in if evidence warrants.
Unexpected item in bagging area. Remove this item before. Please wait while we verify your bags.
Malloy Kundu says checkout aisles are packed with activity, so video surveillance is critical to loss prevention. And to meet growing demand, StopLift has just rolled out new technology to speed up self-checkouts.
Using the same technology that we can use to detect theft, we can actually use it now to reduce the number of false alerts.
Triggered by wallet or keys placed on a scale, for example. And with more mobile self-scanning consumers queuing up to self-checkout, reduced false alerts will be critical. But what theft deterrent will work best to reduce scan-and-go type theft?
Really, the best thing that retailers can do today to deter theft for mobile checkout type systems is to do audits of some sort at the point of exit.
Less cashiers could mean more clerks at retail store exits. In the meantime, Malloy Kundu and his team at StopLift plan to release a mobile self-checkout theft solution soon.
Many retailers around the U.S. Cite mobile engagement with customers as one of their highest priorities.
Dr. John Aloysius, who is collaborating with Vishwanath Venkatesh, says mobile point-of-sale technology will only proliferate. As for using smartphone apps like Scan & Go, Dr. John Aloysius says it's not on thieves' radar yet.
But one thing that they assured me was that it wouldn't take them long. So therefore, while they might be reluctant to venture into something new, once they did have the information, they were not shy about saying, yes, we'll figure it out.
Independent research indicates that a majority of shoppers perceive stores with mobile scan and self-checkout technologies as catering to customer preferences. And early research indicates young people, families, and certain middle-aged shoppers tend to use it the most. Along with Walmart, Home Depot, Lowe's, and CVS, a southern supermarket chain, are installing self-checkouts. East Coast supermarket chain Giant Eagle has discovered a handy theft deterrent, requiring customers to use a store loyalty card to self-checkout. Fraud can be easily traced that way. And Dr. John Aloysius says JCPenney's experimenting with something entirely new.
They're looking at models where store employees have iPads or iPods, and they walk the store, and they can help someone to check out anywhere on the floor.
Discount supply chain retailers were looking toward passive RFID tags, radio frequency identification chips, to electronically track store items. The cost of so many tags has remained a barrier. But once enabled, RFID could reduce retail theft to almost nothing. One high-end jeweler reported testing item-level RFID tags during a chaotic holiday season. The tags completely eliminated theft and drastically reduced inventory labor. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about retail loss prevention technology, visit stoplift.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Stephen Bias, who is the conductor for the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra. I'm going to sound like a late-night television commercial for a moment. The season is over, but wait, there's more.
Yes.
You're back.
I'm back, and for one of the most enjoyable aspects of my job as a conductor, when I get to involve what I do and turn my efforts to education, it's a personal mission of mine. Because my life was changed the first time I saw a symphony orchestra at the age of 8 in the third grade. And the Arkansas Philharmonic has been extraordinarily fortunate to connect to the Carnegie Hall, Weill Music Institute, link up orchestra concerts. And they're some of the most exciting things that are happening in music education these days. And I'm back here to go and be the Pied Piper for music, and I'm visiting all 10 of the elementary schools here in Fayetteville and talking to the students, the fourth graders and the fifth graders, all of them, about the program. They've been studying the curriculum for a few months, and they sing and play recorder, sing in Portuguese, one of the songs when we study Brazilian sambas. It's just a thrilling time for me to be able to connect, but also plant these seeds that are so important to help these young people become better human beings.
Now, as you're sitting in here, you still have your visitor's tag from one of the elementary schools you've been to today. How does this work? When you go into the school, what happens?
Well, I'll back up just a couple of steps. The schools or school districts may apply to the Carnegie Hall Weill Music Institute to be a part of this program. And if the school systems commit to teaching the curriculum, it will culminate in the students coming to the orchestra concert and actually performing with the orchestra. They sing and play recorders, and they sing in two languages, usually at least two languages. But the concepts that are taught through the curriculum are extraordinary because they connect to core curriculum subjects where, for example, we're doing a Brazilian samba, a Cidade Maravilhosa, where the kids sing in Portuguese, but they study about Brazilian culture and so geography, social studies, contemporary news are all covered with just one of the songs that we're doing. The Beethoven Symphony No. 5, First Movement, they study motives and how a motive of just four notes in this case can be developed into an entire movement, which also applies to creative writing and the idea of a theme that could be developed throughout something. So schools will apply. And if they're accepted, Carnegie Hall provides materials, study guides for the students and the teachers free of charge. I am so enthusiastic about this program, and I believe in it. I visit the schools, I talk to the kids, and we always reserve time at the end of the sessions for questions. It's remarkable what a fourth or fifth grader can ask, the profound depth of the queries that will come my way. One young man a couple of months ago in an orchestra in Mississippi said, I mean, kids are usually asking how many. Now, how many strings are also on the cello? Oh, well, those are four. And that's really horsehair? Yes, it is. One young 8-year-old third grader said, "Are you always inspired when you conduct music?" And I thought, well, that's an interesting question.
That's a great question.
Well, and so I said, well, most of the time I am. But if I'm not, I'm a professional, so I can still make great music. And I tried to move on, but he would not let it go. And he said, if you're not inspired, does it affect the way I hear the music? And number one, I'm astonished that an 8-year-old could think on something so deeply. But his teachers told me that the music has suddenly changed his personality, where he's thoughtful in a deeper way. And that's the power of music. That's just one example of how this can ignite music, can ignite connections to other things. And, you know, the very best doctors and dentists and truck drivers and bookshop owners, they with music in their background, have made connections to other things in their lives that broaden life's experience. And it begins here. And this is such a stellar program put together by Carnegie Hall. And the music teachers here in Fayetteville are astonishingly good. They've done wonders with incorporating this curriculum and connecting to other classes. And so the students are come to the concerts on Friday, bring their recorders, bring their voices. They'll actually, there's one tune where they've learned some modern dance moves that are polyrhythmic, and we don't say it's polyrhythmic, mm-hmm. but they're studying rhythm, and rhythm is mathematics. And the teachers have embraced this. They'll see the orchestra, they'll perform in their seats. There are graphics above the orchestra with the song and the notes and other pictures of Beethoven and pictures of the Blue Danube. And we have a host and singers and recorder leaders. We bring in dancers from the Northwest Arkansas Ballet and the Fayetteville High School Drumline will make an appearance at the end.
But,
I mean, it's just like an extravaganza.
Now, this is not open to the public, right? Because you've got other students and school people.
That's right.
People.
We're at the Fayetteville High School Performing Arts Center, this new beautiful space.
Right.
But we are crammed to the gills at both of our concerts with students and teachers. We do have some administrators and other teachers who are coming to stand along the back wall, but we'd love to do it. This is the first time we've done it, and the first time it's been done in Northwest Arkansas. So in the future, we'd like to expand maybe a larger location or more performances so that students could be involved. But it's just about as exciting and promising as anything can be in music these days.
Thanks so much for your time.
Always a pleasure.
So you think you know it all. What is twerking? Yes, and Eleanor is on the line from Kansas City. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi.
Well, do you know what twerking is?
Is it like twisting or something?
You mean twisting in a dancing kind of movement?
Yeah.
Yes, of course, we can accept that.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. It isn't. I think it is. I have no idea what it is, really. It's kind of a dance thing.
Yay!
Join me this week for fun, laughs, and the quiz on the What Do You Know Radio Hour from PRI, Public Radio International.
What Do You Know? Saturday mornings at 10 on KUAF.
With summer vacation upon us, children will have plenty of time to let their imaginations run wild during the coming months. They can pretend to be an astronaut, a doctor, or even a ballerina.
Now lift and reach, better, yes.
If children actually want to learn about dance, they may be interested in the Northwest Arkansas Conservatory of Classical Ballet's Fairy Tale Dance Camps. Margie Bordowski, director of the conservatory, says this year's camps will focus on Cinderella.
And in each camp, they will learn about the ballet itself. They will learn how to choreograph, even the little ones. It's learning how to interpret that music and feel what the composer was trying to get across. Prokofiev was the author of this ballet, and they will learn about him in the older levels. But we want them to learn everything about the ballet itself, but there will be fun things. They will get to do some arts and crafts that are geared toward the ballet. They will learn a dance and get to perform on the last day. And we'll also have a little bit of learning about their nutrition as a dancer. Proper nutrition, not starving yourself, but eating the right, making the right choices. And it just really ought to be a lot of fun.
Margie says the school's principal previously worked with this program, which is through Leap and Learn, and she felt it was a solid program that would work well with students as well as with what they're trying to accomplish at the school. The camps are 4-day-long sessions, and there are different classes for 3- to 5-year-olds, 6- and 7-year-olds, and 8- to 10-year-olds. The first camp begins June 3rd, and each class ranges from 1.5 to 2.5 hours, depending on the age of participants. Prices range from $75 to $125, again, depending on the age group. And registration forms are available at the conservatory, which is located at 3111 Southeast J Street in Bentonville. So, with a number of options for dance classes in the summertime, why would young dancers enjoy participating in this themed camp?
Because I still see the older girls loving the parts that they do during some of the advanced classes. They are learning bits and pieces from Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, the classics. I think they have seen it since they were young. They know the stories, and now they get to dance the stories. It's just a connection, and I think it touches especially little girls, but we need princes. We need those boys to come in and learn to dance. We have to have people lifting those beautiful ballerinas up.
If you're looking for another magical place for children, the Art of Motion in Fayetteville will host fairy princess camps for children 3 to 6 years old this summer. Participants will have the chance to dance, dress up, work on crafts, and perform for parents. The organization will also host Razorback Dance Camps, which will feature Miranda Timms, an Art of Motion alum, who now dances for the University of Arkansas. Later this summer, the Rogers Activity Center will host some dance camps. These age-specific camps will be taught by instructors from Ballet Westside August 5th through 8th. Participants 3 to 6 years old can learn ballet, while children 7 to 11 can participate in hip-hop or cheer and dance classes. If you're looking for dance opportunities in the River Valley, Western Arkansas Ballet in Fort Smith will offer week-long dance camps for children ages 4 to 12, and they will teach various styles of dance, including ballet, jazz, and hip-hop. Of course, dancers often need music to dance, too, so if producing music is what moves you, the School of Rock in Rogers has summer music camps for beginner, intermediate, and advanced-level musicians. The organization is also offering a pop punk camp and a British invasion camp. According to the School of Rock's website, there is also a create your own camp option where a small group can set up its own private camp to focus on songwriting, recording, or just rocking out together. In July, the University of Arkansas will once again host band, orchestra, and choir camps for junior high and high school students. For more information on any of these camps, as well as a list of links to other dance and music camps in the area, visit our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. Every spring, more than a dozen writers gather together in Eureka Springs. Usually, this gathering, called Books in Bloom, features a couple of mystery writers, maybe a memoirist or two, a novelist, some writers of nonfiction. Some are from Arkansas, some from the rest of the world. The one thing they all have in common is a desire to talk about the processes of writing and reading. This year's Books in Bloom is Sunday at the Crescent Hotel in Eureka from noon until 5. Again, this year it serves as a fundraiser for the Carroll and Madison County Library Association. One of the writers speaking this year is Jerusalem Jackson Greer, author of the book A Homemade Year, The Blessings of Cooking, Crafting, and Coming Together. While it is correct to describe Jerusalem as a writer, it's not a complete description. She also says she is, in no certain order, a wife, a mama, a yoga fan, book addict, reluctant gardener, crafter, author, former pastor, blogger, and that's an incomplete list. Her book is, interestingly, given that list, about a family's attempt to slow down.
My family, we say kind of right now, our goal or mission as a family is we're trying to find a way to live a slower version of modern life. We definitely like our technology. We like our iPhones, and I'm a blogger, so of course I do a lot of social media. So we don't want to completely withdraw from the world, the fast kind of paced world. I work outside the home, and so does my husband, and we have a busy life, and so we're trying to find that way to kind of slow down where we are instead of, you know, a lot of people do try to find a way to just kind of completely take themselves out of modern life, whether it's to move to a farm or another country or to do that sort of thing. And we are not in a position to do that. And so we have been trying to figure out how can we live slower, more sustainably, take more notice of what's around us instead of always thinking about what could be, and trying to find out how to do that right where we are without changing all of our external circumstances.
I like that answer.
Thank you.
A homemade year follows the liturgical calendar, which means that there are some things to consider and celebrate that are not words that you hear all the time anymore. Advent, Epiphany. And it's a different sort of way to look at the year, isn't it, for many people?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I was not raised in a liturgical tradition. I had exposure to it. I have a grandmother who is Presbyterian, and she taught at a Catholic school. And so I got glimpses when visiting with her, but it's definitely not how I was raised. But I found that once I had kids and we were trying to establish a rhythm in our home, that I was looking for ways for us to kind of slow down and mark the days. And I noticed that around Easter and Christmas, we had those opportunities. There were a lot of reasons, even though those can feel like, especially Christmas, can feel like it's very busy, you are kind of repetitively acknowledging one certain idea. You're acknowledging one certain kind of ideal and values, or that's not even a good word for it. But so at Christmas, you're doing the same traditions over and over and over, and I found that it helps you kind of to mark your path in life. I can remember every Christmas just about of my life, and not only can I remember the Christmas, but I can remember what my life looked like at that Christmas. I can remember the year that my dad was in seminary, and he got hives, and the puppy, you know, the dog had all the puppies, and there was the snowstorm, and I can tell the story not just of the Christmas, but what was happening in our life at large. And I see following the liturgical calendar as a way to put into place a system to stop throughout the year and take stock and pause for a moment and reflect. And that it also helps when you're trying to look back over your life or my children's childhoods, that they'll remember different parts of their childhood, because they have these kind of these markers, almost like these mile markers throughout the year, and not just at Christmas or not just at their birthday.
I love that, because you're right. We all have these memories of December, and depending on the month you were born then. But there are those gray areas from childhood that I don't really remember what happened in August.
Right. Like, what's all, I mean, yeah. It's just this, you know, March, unless there was an Easter, but it's just kind of this generic month, you know. And so I really wanted to find some ways to hang, almost, I just kind of feel like it's hanging your memories at that spot, and then you make another loop, kind of like hanging a popcorn garland around a tree, that you find these stopping points. So, and I love a good party, and so I found more ways to throw more parties.
You mentioned that you come from a family, as you write, full of preachers.
Oh, yes.
Now, and I just wonder, do you think there, because it seems like there are a lot of families that have preachers and writers in them. Do you think there's a genetic connection there?
I think there's definitely a genetic storytelling, or at least a environmental storytelling component that gets handed down. For the 2 years that I was a pastor and I had to prepare sermons, it was very similar to writing the chapters in the book. And the preachers that I come from, the pastors I come from, that family, are big readers and are big researchers, and they do write out their sermons for the most part. And so, at least in my family, I have found that it does seem to be a shared genetic or environmental component to all of our ending up in this kind of way where we're trying to tell stories and illuminate through them.
You know, when you write a book, you can hear back from people if they write letters, or if you go to something like Books in Bloom. But with a blog, it can be instant.
Yes.
Do you prefer one over the other?
I really, you know, I've had the blog for almost 8 years, I think, and I really do enjoy seeing on that. And now I hear from readers on Facebook, on Twitter, almost every day someone will say, oh, I gave this to my mother and she's loving it, or, oh, you know, I can't put it down. And so it's kind of funny. You get, you kind of feel like you're getting feedback from all directions. And instead of just being able to know, okay, this is the area I'll get feedback and I won't look at that until I'm ready, you can just kind of walk around and it's popping up on your phone and it's coming in through the mail. I really do love, though, getting to meet readers one-on-one. One of the most fun parts about this experience on this side of it is when I take the book to various church groups or women's groups or sewing circles, and I've done some different speaking engagements, and getting to talk about the book and read the book and then hearing back how it resonates with them right away, or their stories. A lot of people start telling me stories about traditions from their childhoods, and that this book kind of brings back to them, and they get a sense of that memory. And so that's been really fun. I really love hearing those sorts of connections, and any way they come to me is wonderful.
Should mention that the blog is jollygoodgal.com. And there is a recipe for something called banana bread pie. Is it as good as that title suggests?
Oh, yes. That pie is a big hit, and it's one of the easiest things to make. I think there's about three ingredients, and it's definitely one of those, if you have leftover bananas and you're sick of making banana bread, it's a fun option.
Finally, I have to, I didn't want to mention this, but I have to, with a name like Jerusalem Greer, and
yes,
Jerusalem Jackson Greer, and you had a father named Johnny Joe Jackson Jr., you had to do some sort of writing.
Yeah. How are you not going to write with a name like that?
Yeah, that's a marvelous name.
Yeah, thank you. I have to give credit primarily to my mother, and like you said, my dad's name is Johnny Joe Jackson Jr., and so there's four of us, my siblings and I, and we all have J names, and they're all from the Bible. So it's Jerusalem, Joshua, Jemima, and Judea.
Oh, those are fantastic.
Yeah, so
what
we
was
never
it?
Got mixed up.
What was it like when you would meet a stranger or a teacher for the first time and they'd see that name?
Well, they either wanted to know if I had a nickname, which my mother was very adamant that I would not have a nickname. She said, I named you Jerusalem for a reason, and that's what you will be. And then the other thing is, especially it seemed because I did, like I said, come from a family of pastors, and so I was in church environments quite a bit. There's an old song that they say, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, and so people would just sing that to me. I'd walk through the door, and that's just, you know, I just got that a lot, or the Israel or Bethlehem, you know, they just kind of play off of it. But I really never minded. I love my name, and I feel very privileged to have such a unique name, and am grateful for a creative mother who thought of it.
Jerusalem Jackson Greer is the author of the book A Homemade Year, The Blessings of Cooking, Crafting, and Coming Together. She'll be in Eureka Springs twice this weekend, Friday evening from 5 until 8 at Eureka Time, and Sunday as part of Books in Bloom from noon until 5 at the Crescent Hotel. You can read much more from her at her website, jollygoodgal.com, and that's good with an E at the end. You can learn more about the other writers scheduled to be at Sunday's Books in Bloom at booksinbloom.org.
With research drawing positive associations between music lessons and IQ, many new parents may wonder how they can encourage their young ones' experiences with the arts more effectively. One Little Rock author has come out with a children's book she hopes will help parents bring their child's early educational experiences to life. Karen Trico Stewart from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock has this report.
Amy O enjoys music and is an accomplished piano and violin player. She's a graduate of the Eastman School of Music and Columbia University and has taught children at New York City's prestigious Mandel School. She got married and her husband suggested they move to Little Rock.
He called me up and said, well, what do you think of Little Rock, Arkansas? I said, I don't know, but we don't have any kids yet and we don't really have our own place. Let's do it. So I came down here and then I found a job at St. Mark's Episcopal Day School, and I'm teaching music to the 2 through 4-year-olds right now.
The idea of the book came out of activities she'd done with the kids she'd taught in New York and the one she teaches here in Little Rock.
And a lot of times when I teach such young children music, If they do need to learn lyrics, I use images to help them because I find that when they see a picture or an illustration, they tend to grasp onto the concept much faster.
She said the kids seemed to love it, and her sister, who's not a teacher and has young children, appreciated it. So O set out on a mission to help parents who don't have a teaching background and haven't really formally studied topics like how to engage children in curriculum. She thought if she made a book with concepts like counting down and peppered in some ideas of how parents can incorporate things like tracing your finger along the number on the page, it could lead to true teaching moments between parents and young ones at home.
I want to empower the parents to feel like they too can be involved. They can just have a quick glance and be like, oh, that's something feasible for me to do with my kid.
The book is called The Five Mini Bees, and O, who did the writing and illustrations for the book, says it's a lot about a concept called purposeful playing, a term often used in the teaching world. She says purposeful playing is something that isn't hard and doesn't have to take a long time.
You know, sometimes when you're tired and you've come home from work and it's been a long day and you're reading this book and you're like, well, I'm just reading this book. But, you know, having some fresh ideas like, oh, I can do this or I can do that. And it just elevates the level of purposeful playing.
Since the words are naturally musical, O encourages parents to read it and add their own tune wherever they want.
Five mini bees went out to fly on a yummy cherry pie. The farmer's wife shooed them away. Shoo, shoo, shoo. So one mini bee flew home that day. The next day, four mini bees went out to fly on a yummy blueberry pie. We have a little mom here saying, you can go through the book and you can talk about the colors of the pies with your kid. The farmer's dog woofed them away, woof, woof, woof. And you can even point out woof, woof, woof here with your kid. So one mini bee flew home that day.
O says there are other things she does as a music educator of young ones that parents can easily do at home.
I tell my 3 to 4-year-olds, you know what? Let's take out the word pie. So let's sing the word pie in our head. So then it would become five mini bees went out to fly on a yummy cherry. And so that type of what I call internal hearing is also very musically engaging because now these 3 to 4-year-olds are able to grasp onto something that's actually very abstract.
She says she enjoys her job at St. Mark's Episcopal Day School not just because she gets to teach the children there, but because she now also gets to take her young daughter, who's only an infant, to work with her.
I do attachment parenting, so she's literally attached to me. And I figured out how to play the guitar on my side with her on me. And so what she does is she's very quiet, so that kind of helps. And she'll sing along with the kids from time to time.
You can learn more about Amy O's book, The Five Mini Bees, and see her colorful illustrations at our website, KUAR.org. Karen Trigo Stewart, KUAR News.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, still more new blues releases like Jimmy Vivino and the Black Italians, Papa Chubby, Arthur Big Boy Crudup, Peter Novelli, J.J. Gray and Mofro. Hear it this Friday night at 9 o'clock on the Generic Blues Show. We'll see you then.
This is Ozarks at Large, and downtown Bentonville is preparing for a month-long salute to the arts. The June Arts and Culinary Festival launches with a big arts fete on the 1st and pretty much doesn't allow for rest until the 30th when Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art will host a free informal drawing session. In between, there are garden tours, film screenings, art tours of the collection at 21C, concerts, and special culinary events at downtown restaurants. In all, there are 55 occasions to celebrate the arts in the city in 30 days.
Take a look around. Just come on up and see what's going on. There's going to be something going on every day and every night, practically.
Thomas Merritt, a Bentonville native, has owned an art gallery in the city and is informally tagged as the Art Czar of Bentonville. He says one of the cornerstone events is the annual art walk scheduled for Friday and Saturday, June 7th and 8th. Held on the town square, Thomas Merritt says the art walk is a way to have artists meet people that might not have the time or inclination to always seek out a gallery.
Well, that's pretty much the culture we're trying to create at the moment. I opened a gallery a couple of years ago, and because it's being turned into something even greater, I don't have the gallery anymore. But that doesn't mean we have plenty of opportunities, and we hear it from both sides, from the artists and from the patrons and the buyers and the art lovers, where can we get together and enjoy each other's work and what we have to offer? We are continually creating more and more opportunities, whether it be the art walk, the new program we're starting called Around the Block, which we'll probably talk about another time, which will be something we continue on through the season on Thursday nights.
Downtown Bentonville is the organization that oversees the June Arts and Culinary Festival, but the Art Walk predates its creation. Becky McCoy began the Art Walk in 2003 when National Main Street Association representatives were planning to visit Bentonville. She says the local Main Street program was anticipating the arrival.
And they wanted something happening in Bentonville. And so they asked me to brainstorm, and we had actually several empty spaces in downtown Bentonville at the time, and we had some retail spaces, and so we just got a committee together and put artists inside businesses and made it an actual art walk, and we had music inside there and everything. I think we drew from very local artists because it was a no fee, please come, we love your work.
That single event blossomed into a regular activity on designated Mondays. And since then, Downtown Bentonville Incorporated was created, Crystal Bridges opened, and the population boomed. Suddenly, arts and galleries began to become a vital part of the city's profile.
It was also about the infrastructure, about creating opportunities for artists to sell their work, to make a living in Bentonville. And that was really an underscore part of this festival.
Daniel Hintz is the executive director of Downtown Bentonville. He says the core of the celebration is about not putting arts in a single spotlight, but integrating arts 365 days a year into a civic conversation.
Art needs to be part of the everyday. I think that's good for the community. It's good for people's psyches, good for people's souls. And the art walk, which, you know, very grateful for Becky to just keep grinding through, as we talked about that for how many years, 12 years, just pushing through. But it's just good for a community. And I think Bentonville, with, you know, the partnership of these two great people, as well as folks like Boyce Billingsley, who's been a community partner of ours, Crystal Bridges, and even to Cox Communications, which has jumped on board to help us with the whole Art and Culinary Festival itself. It takes a community to do this.
Becky McCoy, the architect of those first art walks, says often artists can use such a boost.
When you're so involved and you're so creative, the marketing side of what you do is usually a downside. You don't exactly know how to do that. And just to have them come and show whether they are selling anything at all, a lot of artists come back, or people come back, they don't buy that night, maybe they're in a hurry, they're doing something, but they've come, and they do a commission later because they remembered your work. So it's just invaluable to artists to get out there and be out there, no matter what, whether they sell or they don't.
The Art Walk, part of the June Arts and Culinary Festival in Bentonville, is Friday, June 7th from 4 until 9 p.m. and Saturday, June 8th from 9 until 2. You can learn more about the Art Walk and the entire festival at downtownbentonville.org.
The IRS and the Justice Department come under fire for harassment of the Tea Party and the press, respectively. Hillary Clinton takes more heat on Benghazi. And in Massachusetts, Republican Gabriel Gomez gains on Democrat Ed Markey. I'm Neil Conan, political junkie Ken Rudin, plus former DNC chair Howard Dean on the future of the Democratic Party. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The KUAF website giveaway is offering tickets to the music festival Rocklahoma in Pryor, Oklahoma, May 24th through the 26th. The winners will be announced this Friday during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Other giveaways include tickets to Wakarusa and Thunder on the Mountain. Separate registration for each event is required. Information and registration are available on the web at KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Figure Five.
That's always a fun one.
Yes, between Siloam and Van Buren. Mm-hmm. And I selected that town today because today is the 60th birthday of one George Brett, the greatest player in Kansas City Royals history, who, of course, wore number
five.
Right.
Huh. And what's your favorite number, Kyle?
Five.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. No, not really.
No.
Not really that interesting, actually.
Okay. I just wanted to give people a heads up that KUAF will debut NPR's Radio Lab this Saturday beginning at noon. It's followed by Travels with Rick Steves at 1 and Woodsong's Old Time Radio Hour at 2. For more information on our Saturday lineup of programs, you can visit KUAF.com.
And still on at 3 and 3:30 are All Songs Considered and Tales from the South.
Yes.
Still there.
Still there. I'm excited about Radiolab.
Many people are. I actually received a text yesterday. Someone heard Pete Hartman during Morning Edition play the promo and exclamation point after Radiolab. That's all it said. Radiolab. Very excited. It's right in that NPR sort of brand of programming. Very interesting.
It's one of the ones that I've always heard good things about, and then I've never taken the time to like download all the podcasts mm-hmm. and listen to them.
Now you don't have to.
But yeah, I don't have to now, and I think it's something... A friend of mine told me I would really like it, so it's...
I think your friend is correct.
Excellent. Another note, I want to let people know that the deadlines for entries for a sustainable landscape competition here in Fayetteville have been extended until noon on Friday. Mm-hmm. The City of Fayetteville Urban Forestry Advisory Board, they're hosting a competition for the best examples of sustainable landscapes. They're offering an award to one residential property and one commercial property. Applications will be accepted from addresses located within the Fayetteville city limits. Each winner will be recognized through local press and receive a landscape recognition sign that can be displayed for up to 6 months on the winning property. So you can let people know that you won.
Right.
So that's cool.
6 months. I like that.
6 months. Yeah. So you can find some more information about that at urbanforestry.accessfayetteville.org.
The Circle of Life Hospice is inviting residents in the region to attend this weekend's Ribbons of Memories Memorial Service. It's for families, friends, and caregivers who have lost a loved one. The Bentonville Ribbons of Memory Spring Memorial Ceremony will take place Sunday afternoon at 2 at the Circle of Life Chapel. The Springdale Ribbons of Memory Spring Memorial Ceremony is scheduled for 5:30 Monday evening. That takes place at the Bill Fleeman Memorial Chapel. These memorial events are open to the public. If you'd like to know more, you can go to nwacircleoflife.org.
The 7A state championship baseball game between Fayetteville and Rogers has been moved to 2 o'clock on Friday to accommodate Rogers High School graduation later that evening. The game will be played at Baum Stadium.
All baseball, softball, and soccer state championships are in Fayetteville this weekend, Friday and Saturday.
Oh, all of them are. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. The Fayetteville-Rogers High School baseball game, this is kind of a conflict for you, no?
Because
it's where you
conflict?
Work and where you live.
But my alma mater is Rogers. What
there
kind of a conflict
so, okay.
is that?
All right, none.
No,
none
no.
whatsoever.
No conflict
none whatsoever.
Whatsoever.
Okay.
Go Mounties. I said what I said.
You did. You did. And the Arvest Cup Youth Soccer Tournament still going on at the Rogers Activity Center. This is the 6th annual youth soccer tournament at the RAC. The games have been going on for a couple of days. I think they actually began Monday. Mm-hmm. And the championship games will be Saturday at the Rogers Activity Center. These are for 9U, or U9, as you soccer people would say.
As you soccer people?
And U11 as
yes.
well, boys and girls
U9
teams.
And U11, yes. That's how you would say that.
Very good.
A rummage sale to benefit the Fayetteville Boys and Girls Club is going to be Saturday from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Boys and Girls Club on Ripple Road in Fayetteville. Proceeds from the sale will directly benefit the club and go to summer and leadership programming for Fayetteville's children. Sale is open to the public. If you would like to make some donations, they will accept them until the end of the business day today.
Should point out that Antoinette's alma mater not only playing for a 7-8 state championship baseball title, but softball as well. Rogers in both of the championship games.
Hooray, Mounties.
Yes.
Just saying. Just saying.
As far as I know, I don't think there are any
Mountain
Home teams.
I was going to say, how's your alma mater doing?
Baseball got to, I think, the quarterfinals this
really?
Year.
Really?
Yeah, semis, maybe.
And they're in different...
Baseball is 6A.
Yeah.
Or Mountain Home is 6A, yes.
Okay. Because I know when I was in school... We were in the same conference, but then they,
right.
I think that's when we only had 5A.
Right. Right. Rogers grew a little bit more than Mountain Home did.
We did.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah. Mountain Home's got about 15,000 people now, 16,000, I think.
Okay. Well, right. Good luck to everybody playing
that's right.
this weekend.
That's right.
Ozarks.
Mountie or otherwise.
Mountie or otherwise, yes. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening and have a happy Wednesday.